feud between former U.S. President Donald Trump and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Kentucky Republican, continues to simmer as the midterm elections approach later on this year. Donald Trump has repeatedly attacked Mitch McConnell over the past year, with the criticism appearing to escalate in recent months. The former president has dubbed the top Senate Republican an old crow, while Mitch McConnell has condemned Donald Trump for helping to incite the violence of 6th of January 2021. As the 2022 midterm election draws closer, McConnell is working to support Republican candidates who do not necessarily enjoy the support of the former president, the New York Times has reported on Sunday. The Senate minority leader has reportedly suggested many Trump-backed candidates are goofballs, while pushing for anti-Trump conservatives to run for Congress. McConnell has made it very clear that you've been there for Alaska, you've been there for the team, and I'm going to be there for you, said GOP Senator Lisa Murkowski, who voted to convict Donald Trump in his second impeachment and is facing a Republican primary challenger backed by the former president to the New York Times. With most political analysts widely expecting Republicans to retake control of the House and possibly the Senate this November, the battle between Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump could have major implications not just for the future of the GOP, but for the country as a whole. While Trump and his faction of the GOP have embraced the so-called big lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen in favor of President Joe Biden, Mitch McConnell and a number of others within the Republican Party have rejected this conspiracy theory. A lot of Republicans, even if they don't disagree with Trump themselves, see him as threatening their coalition and perhaps threatening democratic institutions. Specifically, Trump's support for the lie that the 2020 presidential election was stolen is very awkward for any Republican who would like to run on something else. Hans Knoll, an associate professor at Georgetown University who researches political coalitions and political parties, told Newsweek on Sunday. Meanwhile, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, a California Republican, has aligned himself closely with Donald Trump, choosing a different path from Mitch McConnell. Kevin McCarthy is really a cheerleader, Senator Kevin Cramer, a North Dakota Republican, told The Hill last week. Mitch McConnell is smart, cunning, and calculating. Following the attack against the U.S. Capitol, Kevin McCarthy initially blamed Donald Trump for the riot. However, he then traveled down to visit the former president at his home at Mar-a-Lago in Florida to patch up their relationship. The top House Republican aims to become House Speaker following the 2022 midterm elections, which requires him to maintain the support of pro-Trump representatives as well as Trump critics within Congress. If, as expected, Republicans capture control of the House and Senate, then Mitch McConnell may be in a stronger position, but pro-Trump Republicans in the House may have more influence too. Hans Knoll, associate professor at Georgetown University, told Newsweek. Hans Knoll added, "Of course, if Republicans win big in the House, it will be in part from more moderate districts, which means there could be more non-Trumpian Republicans to act as a balance, but the fight will move to the House, I think." Currently, Republicans can't even agree on what happened on 6th of January 2021 or on whether Joe Biden is a legitimately elected president. The Republican National Committee on 4th of February formally censured Representatives Adam Kinzinger of Illinois and Liz Cheney of Wyoming for their criticism of the former president and their involvement with the House Select Committee investigating the pro-Trump attack against the federal legislative branch of the U.S. government. Mitch McConnell criticized that decision, saying, "The Republican National Committee should not be singling out members of our party who may have different views to the majority. Liz Cheney is facing off against a Trump-endorsed challenger in a GOP primary. Adam Kinzinger decided to forego seeking another House term. We saw it happen on 6th of January. It was a violent insurrection for the purpose of trying to prevent the peaceful transfer of power after a legitimately certified election from one administration to the next. That's what it was, Mitch McConnell told reporters. Donald Trump shot back with a statement criticizing Mitch McConnell. For the old crow, Mitch McConnell, to say that the Republican National Committee should not censure walking Democrat soundbites Liz Cheney and crying Adam Kinzinger is so against what Republicans are about, Donald Trump said. Mitch McConnell has insisted the support of some prominent anti-Trump GOP senators in his effort to shape the future Senate. The New York Times reported that Republican senators Mitt Romney of Utah and Susan Collins of Maine were previously dispatched by the Senate minority leader to lobby anti-Trump Republican Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland to launch a Senate bid. No one should be afraid of President Trump, period. Susan Collins, who voted to convict Donald Trump following his 2021 impeachment trial, told the New York Times. Although Larry Hogan does not plan to seek a Senate seat, he has repeatedly criticized Donald Trump and the faction of the Republican Party that readily falls in line behind the former president. There's a circular firing squad where we attack Republicans. The Republican Party that I want to get back to is the one that believes in freedom and truth, and not one that attacks people that don't swear 100% fealty to the dear leader, the GOP governor told CNN on Sunday. Whether Mitch McConnell or Donald Trump's faction of the Republican Party ultimately win the day remains to be seen. However, even if Trump were to walk away from the political arena, the way he's transformed the GOP appears unlikely to follow suit. In many ways, the tensions are something that cannot be put back in the bottle, Noel told Newsweek. If Trump were to disappear from politics tomorrow, the elements of the Republican Party he's empowered are not going away. Meanwhile, Representative Liz Cheney, a Wyoming Republican, promised in an opinion article that the hearings of the House Select Committee to investigate the 6th of January attack on the U.S. Capitol will show that former President Donald Trump's lies caused the violence. Liz Cheney again leaned into a criticism of Donald Trump and the transformation of the GOP under his leadership in a Thursday, 10th of February article published by the Wall Street Journal. In the article, Liz Cheney said, Republicans used to advocate fidelity to the rule of law and the plain text of the Constitution. In 2020, Mr. Trump convinced many to abandon those principles. He falsely claimed that the election was stolen from him because of widespread fraud. While some degree of fraud occurs in every election, there was no evidence of fraud on a scale that could have changed this one. As the House Select Committee will demonstrate in hearings later on this year, no foreign power corrupted America's voting machines, and no massive secret fraud changed the election outcome. Liz Cheney said that almost all members of Congress are aware that Donald Trump's claims are false. But, she noted, many lack the courage to say it out loud.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
As the Saudi war in Yemen rages on, clashes and cross-border strikes have escalated in the past few weeks. The Yemeni army has conducted several strikes on targets deep inside the United Arab Emirates in response to what it calls the Sheikhdom's complicity in the crimes committed against the people of Yemen. Sana'a has promised to continue the cross-border strikes until the blockade on Yemen is lifted and the war in the country is ended. But how is the UAE involved in the war? The country has been supporting the so-called Southern Transitional Council separatists in southern Yemen since at least 2018. Those are the mercenaries that took control of Yemen's resource-rich Socotra Island in 2020. This move was a departure from its coalition partner, Saudi Arabia, who is only interested in keeping the Yemeni army away from its border. But the UAE has shown interest in controlling the port of Aden as well. Its focus is to have control over the important waterway, the Bab al-Mandab, an important oil shipping route.
Clearly, that's exactly the intention and the reason that Israel is involved is partly because that also means that they have at least the tacit approval of the United States as well. So they think that the UAE thinks that this is the way that they will be able to control this sea route. They're also building a base on the island of Perim, or Mayum, as it's called, just off the coast of Taiz in Yemen. And it's actually, this is also Yemeni territory. But it's right in the middle of the Bab al-Mandab. It's right in the middle of the routes of 20,000 ships that pass through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal.
The Yemeni army has in recent weeks been fighting and liberating land from the separatists in the provinces of Shabwa and Marib. The UAE is Saudi Arabia's main partner in the years-long war that Riyadh and its allies have been waging against Yemen to change the impoverished country's ruling structure. The military campaign has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and turned the entire Yemen into the scene of what the United Nations calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The onslaught enjoys American military, logistical, and political support. The UAE is one of the most advanced air defense systems in the Persian Gulf region, but they haven't been quite successful at stopping the Yemeni army's missiles and drones. The Emiratis are now looking at South Korea, Israel, and France to supply them with additional weaponry and ammunition. In its largest arms export deal in history, South Korea agreed with the UAE to sell $3.5 billion worth of Cheongung II advanced medium-range surface-to-air missiles along with accompanying radars. Abu Dhabi is also in talks with Tel Aviv to buy its missile system dubbed the Iron Dome. The UAE is also eyeing purchasing either Israel's Barak 8 or Spider missile systems. The systems will be installed in addition to American-made THAAD air defense batteries. And all of this comes in the backdrop of the U.S. playing a more prominent role by sending an aircraft carrier and fighter jets to the UAE. In one recent attack by the Yemeni army, the U.S. shot down the Yemeni army missiles. What does all this signal? Will this mean that the Emirates is bent on pressing ahead with its aggression against Yemen, despite the obvious losses of its mercenaries on the ground in the war-ravaged country? And the U.S., along with Israel, have promised support.
The UAE had its own goals in Yemen, which were not the same as those of Saudi Arabia. But they could only happen. The UAE could only fulfill its goals in South Yemen if there was, the Saudi Arabia succeeded in its goals in northern Yemen. That is, Yemen had to be torn apart and split between Saudi Arabian influence and UAE influence.
At any rate, The Yemeni army has vowed to continue to pound targets deep inside Saudi Arabia and the UAE until the war is over. The Yemenis are warning that the Emirates and its trade-based economy won't be able to withstand the attacks. As the Saudi war in Yemen rages on, clashes and cross-border strikes have escalated in the past few weeks. The Yemeni army has conducted several strikes on targets deep inside the United Arab Emirates in response to what it calls the Sheikhdom's complicity in the crimes committed against the people of Yemen. Sana'a has promised to continue the cross-border strikes until the blockade on Yemen is lifted and the war on the country is ended. But how is the UAE involved in the war? The country has been supporting the so-called Southern Transitional Council separatists in southern Yemen since at least 2018. Those are the mercenaries that took control of Yemen's resource-rich Socotra Island in 2020. This move was a departure from its coalition partner, Saudi Arabia, who is only interested in keeping the Yemeni army away from its border. But the UAE has shown interest in controlling the port of Aden as well. Its focus is to have control over the important waterway, the Bab al-Mandab, an important oil shipping route.
Clearly, that's exactly the intention and the reason that Israel and is involved is partly because that also means that they have at least the approval, the tacit approval of the United States as well. So they think that the UAE thinks that this is the way that they will be able to control this sea route. They're also building a base on the island of Perim, or Mayum, as it's called, just off the coast of Taiz in Yemen. And it's actually, this is also Yemeni territory. But it's right in the middle of the Bab al-Mandab. It's right middle of the routes of 20,000 ships that pass through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal.
The Yemeni army has in recent weeks been fighting and liberating land from the separatists in the provinces of Shabwa and Marib. The UAE, Saudi Arabia's main partner in the years-long war that Riyadh and its allies have been waging against Yemen to change the impoverished country's ruling structure. The military campaign has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and turned the entire Yemen into the scene of what the United Nations calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The onslaught enjoys American military, logistical, and political support. The UAE is one of the most advanced air defense systems in the Persian Gulf region, but they haven't been quite successful at stopping the Yemeni army's missiles and drones. The Emiratis are now looking at South Korea, Israel, and France to supply them with additional weaponry and ammunition. In its largest arms export deal in history, South Korea agreed with the UAE to sell $3.5 billion worth of Cheongung 2 advanced medium-range surface-to-air missiles, along with accompanying radars. Abu Dhabi is also in talks with Tel Aviv to buy its missile system, dubbed the Iron Dome. The UAE is also eyeing purchasing either Israel's Barak 8 or Spider missile systems. The systems will be installed in addition to American-made THAAD air defense batteries. And all of this comes in the backdrop of the U.S. playing a more prominent role by sending an aircraft carrier and fighter jets to the UAE. In one recent attack by the Yemeni army, the U.S. shot down the Yemeni army missiles. What does all this signal? Will this mean that the Emirates is bent on pressing ahead with its aggression against Yemen, despite the obvious losses of its mercenaries on the ground in the war-ravaged country? And the U.S., along with Israel, have promised support.
The UAE had its own goals in Yemen, which were not the same as those of Saudi Arabia. But they could only happen. The UAE could only fulfill its goals in South Yemen if there was, the Saudi Arabia succeeded in its goals in northern Yemen, that is, Yemen had to be torn apart and split between Saudi Arabian influence and UAE influence.
At any rate, the Yemeni army is vowed to continue to pound targets deep inside Saudi Arabia and the UAE until the war is over. The Yemenis are warning that the Emirates and its trade-based economy won't be able to withstand the attacks.
Meet the latest addition to Iran's diverse missile arsenal, Khaybar Shekan, a state-of-the-art missile unveiled earlier this week. It can strike its targets within a range of 1,450 kilometers with pinpoint precision. The ballistic missile is solid-fueled and therefore will be ready for launch much faster than liquid-fueled projectiles. It's even much faster and lighter than other Iranian solid-fueled models and can carry a powerful warhead. Ballistic missiles fly up into outer space before returning to hit their targets with a somehow predictable trajectory. This makes them vulnerable to interception by air defense systems. But Iran's armed forces say Khaybar Shekan boasts high maneuverability when it dives down, making it a nightmare for any advanced missile shield. Iran has been manufacturing various types of military equipment and weapons, including missiles, despite many rounds of Western sanctions against its arms industry and other sectors. Missiles are one of the cornerstones of Iran's defense doctrine. Iran has the Middle East's most diverse arsenal of projectiles. From very short-range rockets to advanced ballistic and cruise missiles with pinpoint capabilities, Iran has been working hard to enhance them, both in terms of range and precision.
Iran is merely trying to keep up in order to defend itself. I mean, I'm sure Iran and the Islamic Revolution would like to spend that money elsewhere. But as long as you're being threatened, it is necessary to develop yourself to a degree in order to be able to have that defense. Now, you can have all the greatness that you want, but if you're not capable of defending it, you'll eventually lose it.
The Iranian pursuit of more advanced projectiles has been relentless. It makes no secret of it, because Tehran says they are a must for effective defense in the world's most dangerous region. But how did Iran master the technology to produce advanced projectiles despite decades of sanctions and import bans imposed by the West? The Iranian missile program grew out of the war initiated by the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s. Saddam's forces showered Iranian cities with missiles and bombs provided by the East and the West, while Iranians say no one sold them any proper means of defense. Iranians argue that they had no choice but building their own defense industry domestically and independently. The latest Iranian achievements are a far cry from the earliest models. Meanwhile, the West, especially the United States and its close allies, have described Iran's missile arsenal as a threat. They have tried to push Iran to abandon it, but Iranians seem to have learned to listen from the past and insist that their defensive missile power is a red line that will never be negotiated.
There has been a great deal of growing hostility towards Iran from the imperialist powers, and that in doing so, they have forced Iran to develop a greater and greater weapons with the capacity to defend themselves. They are under assault from imperialism, and this is a constant ongoing threat from the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia, who have formed the imperialist bloc inside of the Middle East.
When repeated Israeli threats against Iran are taken into account, the need for a robust defense program seems more urgent. Iran says its military might will enhance regional security. It also insists that it will never start a war, but if attacked, a crushing response will definitely follow.
Talks are resumed in Vienna to revive the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA. This is the eighth round of such talks in the Austrian capital. The U.S. has so far failed to remove its maximum pressure sanctions, which it imposed on Iran after the former pulled out of the JCPOA, and give guarantees that a future administration will not ditch the deal again. Now, Iran's top security chief said that there is no coherence coming from the U.S. on the revival of the 2015 Iran deal. Ali Shamkhani has stressed that the U.S. administration cannot impose the cost of its internal disputes on Iran.
And I think that now what we are witnessing is a division internally in the United States in the political establishment, both Democrats and Republicans, regarding a resolution to the ongoing situation with Iran regarding whether to go back to the table and to rejoin the JCPOA. We know that Biden has made overtures, and the State Department has said that they would grant some concessions in the forms of sanctions waivers. But like many Iranian commentators and politicians and diplomats have said, it doesn't go far enough.
Voices from the U.S. government show that there is no coherence in the country to make political decisions in the direction of advancements in the Vienna talks. The U.S. administration cannot pay for its internal disputes by violating Iran's legal rights. Envoys from Iran and the P4 plus one group of countries, Britain, France, Russia, and China plus Germany, have been holding negotiations in the Austrian capital for 10 months in a bid to resurrect the JCPOA.
And I think that there's not much appetite for a deal with Iran at this point. I think the Trump administration did tremendous damage to the JCPOA by removing itself from it.
The new round of talks comes amid rising hawkish voices in the U.S. A group of 33 U.S. Republican senators, led by Senator Ted Cruz, wrote a letter to President Biden warning him that any deal with Iran on restoring the JCPOA requires Senate approval. The senators warned Biden that they will do everything in their power to block a possible deal if he moves forward without them. They also said that the implementation of any agreement will be severely, if not terminally, hampered if the Biden administration does not fulfill a range of obligations in relation to congressional oversight over any agreements. The Republican senators said that if there is a deal that does not have Senate approval, it would be subject to being reversed as soon as there is a new president.
We see that the United States has been belligerent and has continued to put what it calls a maximum pressure campaign on the Iranian people, on the Iranian state, on the legal and legitimate Iranian government. And we see it as a web of coordinated activities by which we also know that Israel and the Zionist lobby are also pushing very heavily in the United States, in Washington.
The former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally left the JCPOA in May 2018 and reimposed the anti-Iran sanctions that the deal had lifted. He also placed additional sanctions on Iran under other pretexts not related to the nuclear case as part of his maximum pressure campaign. The pressure campaign was led by the Israeli and Arab lobby groups in the U.S. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden says it is willing to compensate for Trump's mistake and rejoin the deal, but it has retained the sanctions as leverage.
So I think that the internal divisions in the United States politically will continue to give free rein to the national security state in the United States to continue to put maximum pressure on Iran. But we know very well that Iran is a sovereign country and it will defend itself.
Iranian officials have repeatedly stressed that the onus falls on the U.S. to remove all illegal sanctions against the Islamic Republic in a verifiable manner and guarantee that a new U.S. administration would not breach the JCPOA again.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is your host Musa Al-Bahadali and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program we discuss problems and questions parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this segment are founded in the Holy Quran and in the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon him and upon his family, supplemented with scientific data and facts. Joining us in the studio is a guest speaker and Islamic researcher, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi from the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today, dear listeners, we will be talking about mistake number 10 parents make when raising their children. And this mistake is unfortunately perhaps an overlooked one, not much discussed, unfortunately. And the mistake is frowning and just generally not smiling around your children. Dear Sayyid, what do you say about this subject?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. Now, with a lot of parents, they adopt a method in their houses. And alhamdulillah, this maybe it used to be with the older generation, but with the new generation, it's kind of fading out. There's not much left of them out there, but I hope this disease does not become contagious.
Inshallah.
So we have a lot of parents that they do assume, and some people do it all the time, some people do it some of the time,
right,
where they take, you know, frowning faces and not smiling as a method and a way of teaching the child.
Of disciplining.
Yeah, of disciplining the child. Oh, and they say, well, if I do smile, if I do this and that, the child will feel too comfortable around me, and then he might disrespect me and not listen to me and not do what I want to do. So they take this as a, you know, they see this as a problem if they smile, and the child might be too easy.
Comfortable around them.
Yeah, so they always keep this this face and this manner, this attitude towards the children, which is in fact a wrong attitude, and it's a problem for the child. Now, the question becomes, how would the child understand right from wrong when he's only seeing one specific way from the child, from the parent? So even if you do something right, they're not going to smile for you.
There's no feedback.
Yeah, there's absolutely, the face doesn't give any feedback. So the child, he looks at you, whether he does good or bad, there's nothing coming out of you.
So this is a poker face that you're wearing, basically.
Yeah, it's a poker face. You're always the same. So we say, well, this is not a correct method, that parents need to change that for sure. So thinking that you're actually doing something good, or thinking that this is a nice or a good way of trying to put your kids on track and making them do that which is right, then you're obviously going wrong about it, because that's not how it happens.
Just to mention a small point, there was also a research, a field study done some years back, where they took toddlers and their mothers and put them in a room, and they just told the mother to behave normally, as you would with your child, smiling, playing with them, making them laugh and funny, and so on. And then he said suddenly to the mother, now stop playing, stop smiling, just do a poker face. And you could immediately see how the child's behavior changed. He started to become anxious and started to become worried. You can see the child even started to cry. And this is a toddler who cannot express their emotions. And how would a child who's slightly older than fair?
Exactly. I think I've seen the one you're talking about. And that's exactly it. That's a problem that a lot of parents, they think that adopting such a method is actually helping, but in fact it's not.
No, it is damaging. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, dear Saint.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the mistakes some parents make when raising their children, and that is not smiling and basically frowning around their children 24/7, just wearing a poker face in essence. Dear Sayyid, please pick up where you left off.
Now, having said that, we say that the child himself naturally needs to feel the praise and the support of his parents when he does something good. So he understands the value, at least he understands the value of justice, to say the least. So even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, هَلْ جَزَاءِ الْإِحْسَانِ إِلَّا الْإِحْسَانِ, that is it, you know, rewarding good except with good? So if you do good, it has to be rewarded with good. If a child does something good, you need to be nice and smiling and gentle with them and everything else. So from here we ask that parents that when they see something from their child, that the children done something good, they should give them the encouragement and the love and the whatever they require to encourage the child to
good behavior, good morals. Yeah.
So they encourage him to even do even more next time.
Of course.
When I do something good and I see my parents' reactions are still the same, I feel let down. I'm like, what's the point of doing such an action?
You feel disappointed. Yeah, why would I do this?
They don't care.
If it's my fault, I expected something from them, then you stop doing it and it spirals out of control.
Yeah, so we see that a lot of kids, they stop, for example, studying, they stop working, they stop doing things because they're not getting any feedback or any response from their parents. So we say, that needs to change. And sometimes we have many problems that kids have these days, and the problem is the parents themselves, Right. For example, we have many kids these days, when they look at life and they look how they deal with their parents, they look at it, you know how we say looking at the cup half full or half empty?
Right. Either you're pessimistic or you're optimistic.
Yeah, yeah. So it depends on your mentality. So now the kids, most of the time, they look at it half empty. They constantly...
In a pessimistic way.
Yeah, so they're always looking at it at negative.
Right.
So we're causing them a lot of problems that they don't need. Okay,
right.
Just because we have these faces that we doesn't seem to, as we say, cut the sword itself. So as parents, obviously such attitude needs to change.
Of course.
Such behavior does not work. It does not give any fruits. Enforcing something without akhlaq does not work. So
yes.
The Prophet, without his akhlaq, we wouldn't have any
right.
Muslims.
The morals, values yeah. of the Prophet.
Yeah, and he was constantly smiling. Right. They say every time you look at the Prophet, he's smiling.
Always smiling.
Yeah.
That was his default mode.
Yeah.
Right, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, Allah will be merciful to his servant for his intense love for his child.
Welcome back to your listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing the issue some parents have of not smiling around their children. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
Now, we were saying that in order for us to get rid of this problem, if you don't want to look at it from a scientific, psychological, and therapist perspective, which is wrong totally, you can look at it at least Islamically.
Which you should always right? do with anything.
Yeah, so that first and foremost, you have to look at it Islamically. Now, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He loves the mu'mineen, the believers,
right.
to be people of, as we call, bashasha, you know, easygoing, smiling. With the hadith that says, al-mu'minu hashun bash. Al-mu'min is easygoing,
yeah.
smiling. That's the true mu'min. And the
friendly.
Other hadith that says, al-mu'min huznuhu fi qalbihi wa bishruhu fi wajhihi, that his sadness in his
right.
heart and the smile is on his face.
Right.
So this is the akhlaq of the mu'min. A mu'min, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants him to be an easygoing person, that anyone sees him, gets in touch with him very quickly, they can talk
right.
to him, they can relate
feel
to him.
Feel comfortable around
yeah,
him.
Yeah, feel comfortable
right.
around them. So
yeah.
we have a lot of ulama that you see, they're very easy to get along with.
Right.
They just don't mind. And some ulama, you can't even open a word, like you can't even say a word to them.
The
like
angel
some,
of death.
Some of them, yeah, some of them you say salam to them, they don't even reply to salam. We have such people, what? Because
that is not an anim, Sayyid.
Yeah, of course it's not. Of course it's not. That's just a person with the dress code.
Right.
So
yeah.
we have people, they think that by doing so, they're keeping their self respect and they're keeping their akhlaq on. But a
right.
mu'min, a true mu'min, is not like this.
Of course. How will you preach
yeah,
about
yeah.
Islam if
even,
you are so cold and
exactly.
annoying to be around?
Even Amir al-Mu'min alayhi salam was, I mean, you know how a brave Ali alayhi salam, even his name used to scare the bravest of the Arabs. But
right.
but he's constantly, his companions say he's constantly smiling with them, and you know.
Some say, they say, if I might interrupt, it is bad propaganda that was used against the Mirunin, like the slayer of Arabs, slayer of Arabic people.
No, it's not bad propaganda. I mean, that was reality.
No, when I say propaganda, I mean like, in a way, instead of focusing on his good values, because he was the friendliest person.
Yeah, true. But
more so than he was the killer of every people.
True, that is absolutely true. But the idea is, back in the day, Arabs did not care about other tributes. The only tributes that were, if you want to describe a person back in the day, you describe him by his generosity and by his bravery.
Right.
That was the measurement criteria. So you can't really, we say it was a propaganda. That was just the measurement of that time. But the idea is, even him, he was smiling and kind to kids and kisses kids and sits with kids. And this is the akhlaq of the mu'mineen. This is the akhlaq that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants from us. So who should I listen to? Myself? By thinking that if I take, put on this kind of action and this act, I'm doing good for my children? Or should I listen to Allah and follow the footsteps of the Prophet and the Ahl Bayt alayhi wasalam?
Right.
So obviously doing what Allah wants and the Ahl Bayt is the correct way.
that will get us results.
And may Allah grant us the success and prosperity in following the footsteps of these holy people. And with that, we will end today's program because we are out of time. I thank the dear Sayyid for his insightful knowledge, and I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any questions or comments or some feedback, please, please, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. You can also visit our website, paristoday.com. Alternatively, if you're not such a big fan of these two methods, old-fashioned methods, you can also find us on the various social media sites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Millions of U.S. dollars have been approved recently by the Israeli regime as part of a plan to connect illegal settlements in occupied East Al-Quds with those built in West the Holy City. This was revealed by Israeli media days after the regime's foreign minister Yair Lapid stated that Israel won't build a new settlement that will impede a future two-state solution, but only settler homes will be built in existing settlements across the occupied territories. Settlement watchdog groups said such statements are meant to deceive the world as settlement activity goes on behind the scenes.
What Lapid is saying is just like playing with the words, you know, but it's so clear and obvious that what's happening in Jerusalem is an ethnic cleansing that's going on and Judaizing the city itself. You know, when they are talking about linking the settlements and the outposts in and around Jerusalem with real way to connect it with West Jerusalem, just to make it a surrounding of West Jerusalem, and dumping the whole Palestinian communities in East Jerusalem.
Israel's finance committee has approved a plan worth $310 million in order to link settlements in West Al-Quds with the other settlements in East Al-Quds, where the majority of its residents are Palestinians. The plan also includes expansion of the light rail, roads, and infrastructure construction that would be only serving the settlers. Palestinians say this plan will further undermine the feasibility of East Al-Quds as the capital of the future state. Tel Aviv has done everything possible to minimize the Palestinian population in the Holy City and in Area C that constitutes about 60% of the occupied West Bank. Experts say what Israel is doing is annexation of Palestinian lands without official declaration. Observers say that Israel is moving ahead with settlement construction and is erecting new roads to only serve settlers, while at the same time, the occupying regime is squeezing Palestinians out of their land, their ancestors' land, to make their dream of an independent state impossible. Mona Kandil, in front of the illegal settlement of Pesigot, occupied Ramallah.
Coming out in the cold to make sure everyone gets to keep their home warm in winter amid the soaring cost of living in Britain. The government here blames the skyrocketing cost of living on global energy price hikes. These protesters, however, say it's the big companies that have made windfall profits who should foot the bill, not them.
Shell made £14 billion of profit. £14 billion. And BP made £10 billion. Why not take some of that and use that to pay for it?
They need to subsidise those bills. Why not? They've already written off £9 billion on PPE. They've written off £4.9 billion on bad debt, bad COVID loans, bounce back loans. So subsidisers.
The country's energy regulator, Ofgem, has risen the price cap in place to protect the people by more than 50%. The government has introduced a loan scheme to help out, up to $270 per household. But experts say the underlying drivers remain.
There are already a lot of people struggling to keep their homes warm, particularly those who live in houses that are not properly insulated. And the recent price hikes are expected to push as many as a quarter of UK households into fuel poverty.
Rising bills will affect millions, but they'll bite the hardest for those with fewer choices. Add to that a tax rise set to kick in come April.
It doesn't have to be tax, tax, tax all the time. We need to have something to be given to us as well. It's like benefits are not there anymore for us. So you go to work and you're still ending up being in a situation that, oh, where should I go? I can't afford this, I can't afford that. And every year is situation just getting worse and worse.
Someone young and starting off, you know, ready to buy a house and earn a living, it does make me quite worried, especially living in London. Cost of living keeps on rising. Wage is not really reflected in that. So, I mean, I am quite worried about my future and the high cost of living.
Millions of British households will soon face energy bills of more than $2,000 a year. Whether that much can be managed depends on how much you earn and where you live. Saeed Purza, London.
Yemen is taking a heavy toll on the health sector. Officials in charge of medical oxygen plants say they are among the worst affected by the shortage. The problem is rooted in Saudi Arabia preventing the entry of ships carrying fuel. They are also blocking imports of medical equipment.
The halt in the work of oxygen plants means deaths of thousands of patients, including those who suffer from chronic diseases and need constant access to oxygen. Some plants have partially shut down, and the United Nations must do its duty and force Saudi Arabia to lift the siege imposed on Yemen. The Saudi-led coalition is clearly intent to kill Yemenis, whether by targeting homes with airstrikes or by cutting off medical supplies to them.
The Ministry of Health says only 13 oxygen plants are now working.
As a result of the blockade on Yemen and prevention of fuel ships entry, the output of oxygen plants has decreased by 45%, which may lead to a complete inability to provide oxygen to health facilities. The fuel crisis caused heavy losses to 13 oxygen plants that used to produce over 6,000 cylinders per day, and this fell to nearly 3,000 cylinders. And this threatens the lives of thousands of patients, including children.
Yemen has been suffering under the blockade by Saudi Arabia and its allies since they began their deadly aggression on the country in March 2015. Yemen's Ministry of Health says the siege has pushed at least 300 health facilities to the verge of collapse as their generators stop working due to the severe fuel shortage.
Yemeni health officials say only half of the country's health facilities are still functional, and over 80% of Yemenis face significant challenges in accessing basic care services. Many people here believe that the United Nations should be held responsible for remaining silent toward the illegal Saudi blockade imposed on Yemen. Al-Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
T
Tens of thousands of people marched nationwide, while an estimated 3,000 cars converged in Paris for a freedom convoy, emulating the anti-government movement in Ottawa. The convoy was led by France's Yellow Vests, who resumed their Saturday marches in October and also included some of the long-running protesters against a vaccination smart pass so strict it's been called a de facto vaccine mandate. Equally important for protesters was expressing long-running disapproval of President Emmanuel Macron and his right-wing socioeconomic policies.
The price of gas is killing us. It's all become too much for us to accept. If we keep letting things go, where is France going to end up?
France responded by flooding Paris with over 7,000 police, who waged yet another violent crackdown on peaceful protests. Dozens were arrested, hundreds of fines were issued, tear gas was constant on the famed Champs-Élysées Avenue, and cars were impounded.
I came here from Bordeaux. The government responds with violence because they have nothing else to offer. And this is why the French do not understand them. I do not think the French are stupid. They want to understand. All we want is some answers to our many questions on policy.
In order to prevent the Freedom Convoy from implanting itself, the capital was locked down in many areas, something which Paris saw every Saturday for over 6 months in late 2018 and early 2019. Freedom Convoy may have already wrested a concession. The government announced plans to abolish the pass at the end of March. Many called the timing curious, as that would be just before voters first go to the polls on April 10th. Protesters say they expect more attempts at an Ottawa-style freedom convoy, no matter how repressed by the government this one has been. It's possible the French election campaign of 2022 has just begun. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Never has it been so costly for EU citizens to heat their homes, use electricity or drive their vehicles. 40% of the 27-nation bloc's energy supply requirements are imported from Russia. So is Moscow to blame for the EU's current energy crisis? Not according to European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, speaking in the European Parliament last October.
Gazprom has honoured its long-term contracts with us.
However, last Monday it was claimed Russia has cut gas to the EU and citizens were told plans are in train to offset further suffering.
We're determined to prevent that from happening and to mitigate the impact on energy supplies and prices should Russia choose to cut natural gas supplies to Europe more than it already has.
The fact is, Russia has fulfilled all of its EU gas supply contracts. We've raised this issue with the European Commission.
Is the West using energy as a tool to ramp up tensions with Moscow?
Whether you draw conclusions with wider implications point to additional tensions of a military nature, this is your interpretation. This is not anything that we have said so far.
Political commentators claim the EU's negative Russia strategy is entirely being driven by the US.
They can't have an independent policy. It's a tragedy, I think, because Europeans should have a good relation with Russia. Russia is their neighbour. They share responsibility for the continent, for its future, for its security.
17 billion euro of EU taxpayers' money has been sent to Ukraine since 2014. This despite the European Court of Auditors declaring last September that corruption is rife in the country.
What has been done since September to try and ensure that the 17 billion euro won't be squandered?
If there are shortcomings found and proven, then we are working on removing them and making sure that what we do with Ukraine complies with our rules and with our guidelines.
On the issue of gas, of course, Russia could increase supplies to the EU, but what incentive does it have to do so in the current climate? Observers ask. Russia has the largest natural gas reserves in the world, followed by the Islamic Republic of Iran. Analysts say the EU's access to these markets is being hampered due to influence from the United States, and ultimately it is ordinary citizens who are paying the price. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The images are difficult to look at, but the reality of life for so many people in Bahrain is still one of imprisonment and uncertainty. with a few days shy of the 11-year anniversary of the uprising in Manaus.